Mr. Hay, Reel 7. So, after Operation Tiger, what was the next major thing?
I think the higher authorities realised there wasn't going to be an invasion, and they started to move everybody out. We'd been in force a long time, and we were moved up to Yorkshire. For what reason? I don't know, but we don't know. And then nothing much happened there.
Which bit of Yorkshire?
Otley. In a tented camp. Next to a quarrelsome Scottish regiment. And
in what?
Worse than the Germans.
What sort of clash did you have with them?
Well,
and at what level?
There was a large pub in the area which was to take both battalions, but they were often causing trouble and not well behaved at all.
Would it lead to fights between the two?
Yeah.
What about at officer level? Did you get on with their officers? Or
yes, but then this pub was put up with bounce to us to keep us out of trouble. Because, you know, there was nothing much going on. There weren't any more exercise or something. And then we weren't there long, and we went down to Cornwall.
Where exactly?
Well, let's say I ultimately landed at Land's End, where there was an hotel. The only thing about the hotel was the Germans put a bomb through the middle of it. But anyhow, that was in the winter time, 1942. Yes, the beginning of winter, December, I think. Because the weather was beautiful, we were coming an awful lot with it. One battalion coming in, all of going, all these nice things. St. Ireland's, we had detachments stuck out, and that wasn't really anything. It was just like a summer holiday.
How would you defend the place? I mean, were you moving into existing coastal defences, or did you create your own, or did you just not bother?
You couldn't, not around the coast of Cornwall. We were just there. And just the one battalion, don't mind doing the whole of Cornwall at that stage.
What was the.
There's some gunners in Loo. We were mostly having exercises with the Home Guard. So they've been turning out at nights with the Home Guard. So
what was your impression of the Home Guard's competence?
I really didn't have much to do with chaps. They turned out, they were turning out at night. We were the enemy. And, we were full of all sorts of nasty tricks. It wasn't.
What sort of thing?
Well, we knew this. It was a big exercise for the Home Guard and the coast defences because there were artillery emplacements with barbed wire. Particularly, I tell you about Loo, and this is where again we learned dirty tricks. So we knew we'd take part in this exercise. And it would be to capture, obviously, the artillery emplacements. So, quite openly, three of us went to Loo in a jeep about 2 or 3 days before the exercise. And there was an hotel open where we went and had some coffee sitting in the window across the road with the gun emplacements, masses of barbed wire. Then somebody came along, and suddenly a whole section of the barbed wire opened, went in, and one or two others came in and out of this barbed wire, which seemed to be on a hinge. And this was the thing. We as the enemy were going to capture it, the Home Guard were going to defend it. So I said, we could make this an easy exercise. I'm afraid we did cheaply sell how this thing. It wasn't difficult to get in and capture the gun, but the Home Guard were just spread, scattered, and we knew our field craft. They did put out a nice job. And I was really sorry for them. They could, you know, they were, but there were always these little exercises, but mostly with the Home Guard. But this was, again, about the defence of the gun. But it just let them see that the security wasn't good. I mean, there were people around, and not many people staying in the terrace, but civilians walking and seeing how many these chaps went in and out of this. And this was another thing that you never knew who was watching, what was what.
Did your battalion have any serious military role during this period? Because I can't imagine it having, if anything had happened, that they'd have been able to do much.
No.
So, what were you there for, in your view?
Coastal defence, just covering the coast defence, prevent any raiding parties. We had a role, yes, to watch the coast and... you know, this is why you're covering it. But it was such a wild coast and very difficult to get any cohesion. We were just really spread around a whole lot of places. And then I was moved to Bodmin, which of course the capital of Cornwall. And I was lucky enough to be sent to the barracks there, which was the home of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. And I was then given a captain's command because the new anti-tank guns were coming out, 6-pounders, which was a captain's command. You went by racks, not by what the the guns would do. And
now, I'm a bit confused. You were sent to Bodmin to do what?
Well, just they were moving us around, but then I had the MT section, I had a cadre of potential NCOs, I had signals, you know, they were spread around, so they put little bits of headquarters here then.
So you were with headquarters company at this time?
Yes. I don't know what my role was, really. But it was to take over these new anti-tank guns, which was a captain's command, because this was the only way to get a captain. Now, there was they had these 2-pounders, which was a lieutenant's command. And when I was there, these huge things, many huge things, arrived. So I hadn't been given any instructions about them. And I had a visit from the Southeast Commander, General Lloyd, and he asked what we're all up to. I knew he'd come really to see these new guns. And he said, what you doing about this? And I said, oh, well, we haven't been able to train us on them yet. I said, it's in a heartbeat. I said, oh, I said, well, we'll see about that. So the next thing, I am put on an anti-tank course.
Where was that at?
In the North Coast. I can't remember the name, sorry. At a seaside resort with a beach. Well, I didn't even know anything about the 2-pounder. So I sent on this superior thing with these 6-pounders, which each had a Carton Lloyd tractor to pull it. And I went on the course, and there were artillery people, experienced infantrymen from the 2-pounders. They had 2 very good sergeant instructors. There was a major in charge of the whole thing, and a captain. And I listened, and I did the drills. Not really much about it, but I could remember what these chaps said about this. The great thing about this was it could be manoeuvred up hills, not static like field guns. so we could get an infantry position on the top of the hill and fire at tanks. So the thing had to be taken out just such as you see on the Olympic tournament, where good crews take the wheels off and this, that, that. And so this was part of the training, taking this
so you had to learn the mechanism and how it all fitted together.
And to also take the bits, maneuver it, but also then came the big day when you'd been firing, they put a dummy gun, right, type thing. So you knew that you were getting your aims right, and the target was trolled along the beach, and you were. So that came all right, and then came the big day when you were firing live ammunition. And one chap put a round through the carrier that was pulling the target. Anyhow, these little things. Anyhow, that went out. And then.
What was the gun drill on the 6-pounder? Do you remember now? I mean, what the men on the crew did.
Everybody had a thing about. And the old hands, these were all officers, but the old hands started to run around the gun drill with their elbows bent. This is what the dead gunners did, traditionally, that kind of thing. So these, and I said, look, there's no need for you to do that. Just have your hands ready, But these chaps were so used. Anyhow, I just did exactly what I was told. I repeated word for word what the instructor said, the instructions. Was a good course, and on the last day I wasn't too well because we had a party, but there was this, I didn't know we were going to have this practice, pulling guns, taking bits and so on, and I wasn't pretty well.
A hangover.
Major, whom was there, he said, for God's sake, don't say can't carry that manually. He said, I'm not going to do it for you. Get that to the top of the hill, pronto. And he was whispering this in my ear. I said, oh, God. That was the only step up I made. Anyhow, when the results came out, distinguished. I think just listening to what I said, other chaps will say, oh, you don't do this, we don't do this, and particularly artillerymen. They say, oh, you do it.
So you're fresh, you're clean slate. Was an advantage in some ways, and you just followed it. Did you understand much about gunnery? Because it's quite complicated.
No. Well, you know, was it sufficiently clear, the trajectories and the getting it on an even keel and all this. That was quite certainly get the two bubbles in line and so on and so forth. Yes, it was a good course. It was a nice attempt. I remember. Nice attempt, good food, not too hard, just remembering and paying attention.
How long did it last for?
I think a fortnight.
So short.
More short course, yes. We had to work at it. And then I came back.
Would that be to Bodmin again?
Yes. And they said, right, you'll take over the empty tank platoon. Anyhow, I said to the CO, who was absolutely delighted to get a result because it's a plus for him, and this was the first course. And I gather that I was the only distinguished on it. I would say it was a little bit of favoritism shown. I by this major, particularly on the last day, when I literally just said, let the wheel. Because he'd been with me before, or with all the lads on the party. And so, anyhow, so I went to the CEO. I said, look, that's very nice. I said, I'm not really a gunner. I said, Alice, who'd been I said, he's a very good chap. And I said, I'm sorry he'll feel a bit put out not getting this job. I said, when I was there, I recommended him. He would miss the next course, I said, but I had a word with this major. And I said, such a good course, I'd like this, but I have it. He said, well, we'll find a place for us. So I sent this to CO. Oh, he said, that's good. And I said, forget you ever saw a two-pounder. I said, just go a bit thicky and do this. And do that. And I told him about the course, and I gave him my brochures, and so on, and my notes, and I said, he had a fortnight to study them. And he went distinguished. So, and then he got that.
So you hadn't really wanted the anti-tank
platoon? No, I just got that because of a captaincy.
And so you got your captaincy, but yeah. Then you could move on, so to speak. Had you, with the rank, you kept the captaincy. Had you started the training of the platoon when you got back, of the men?
Yes, but we didn't have the carriers, the Carden Lloyd carriers, so we couldn't take them anywhere. It was a static performance taking the bits. But they were a good team, and they enjoyed taking the bits, and we had to. Have a bit of a stroke where they mastered that. They quite enjoyed that.
So you hadn't got on to firing before
no.
Addis, was no. It, came back?
So anyhow, on my record, I think was the only real thing on my record, we then proceeded where I got it.
And which company was that? You were a company commander then?
Yes. And Seaford, we were spread around mostly private schools. And that was very agreeable because then we knew we were prepared. We'd taken over from some Canadians who were there. But we were going to, the battalion was going to be disbanded. All the time, of course, we had been finding reinforcements for the overseas battalions and little parties, officers, men.
You'd been used as a drafting battalion, like the 14th.
We were purely a drafting battalion.
Had you ever hoped that you would go as a battalion anywhere? Well, the 16th did. You know.
No. You know, I knew early enough that we were a drafting battalion. They kept asking three officers, 50 men, and so on, so you selected them.
Were you hoping to be drafted all the time?
Oh, yes. I said to them, I said, I could enjoy the life I had, but I said, you know, it's my thing. And, you know, one or two good. Pals, I had junior officers, but they were very keen to have captains and wanted lieutenants. Because getting aboard, the chaps who'd done all the work and I'd done all the experience were coming along. And,
so, what exactly happened? You heard that the 17th were being broken up.
Yes.
Was the whole battalion being divided up?
Yes, it was disbanded.
And what was the date? And how was it done, the actual disbanding?
Well, strangely enough, we're a good battalion. We had our own band of bugles. We made a smart turnout. So the first thing was that the CEO, Morkill, asked around, does anybody want a ready-made band? They would take the band, but not the buglers. Had been my anti-tank gunners. So that's why, but they kept the band. But everyone else, apart from the motor transport section and the signal section, all the rifle companies were being got ready for draft.
And that was you by then, aren't you? And this was at Seaford. How would they get you ready for drafting?
Well, they saw that all our weapons, our personal weapons, were up to standard. They saw that all our uniforms were good. And, well, not much else, except that they started to have parties, of course. And they gave us leave, and vacation leave. And when we came back, we had a very good church parade with the band, went to church and to march to Seaford with the band and bugles. And it was a very smart turn out, and very proud of what had been achieved by that battalion. And then we were went to this march to the station again, headed by the band, not the bugles then, but just the bugles. And on the train, we didn't do well with the boys, but they had enough food to for about 3 days. That was more to put on the train for us. And then we got away, we went to Gourock in Scotland and embarked on the Cameronia, on the Cameronia specials.
Did you know where you were going, which battalion you were going to? Did you even know you were going to the Durhams?
No.
You were just a large draft.
Just a large draft. Of course, there were drafts. There were a lot of guards on the ship, but all sorts of people. I don't know where they all come from, but there was a big ship that came up there.
What do you remember about the voyage out?
We obviously went to the Atlantic, and then I think we knew we were going to North Africa somehow. We didn't know officially, but after we'd been out a few days, they said we were going to North Africa, so we worked it out that we would basically hoped we were going to the 16th Battalion. And I was made a troop deck officer, 5 decks down, and I was very impressed with the meticulous way everyone had to be responsible for his own hammock, his own kit. Not a thing out of place, the whole place brushed and swept every day. And then the boat drill. And I had my drill, and I was to get to boat deck 5 and bring my people up on deck. So we had rehearsed all that. For a few days, we got out in the Atlantic. It was quite rough, and obviously the first few days wasn't very nice down on troop deck 5 or any other troop deck. But the drill had to be precision-wise, minute to minute. Troop deck 5, go to your meals, or people were allotted certain tasks each day. You will do this, but so the military discipline came in and people followed it, didn't have any troubles. It was bad when the first few days were the sickness and whatnot and the smells. But they got used to it, and then when we were allowed up on deck, when it was our turn to go up on deck with the boat drill and so on, it was great to get the measure. But they weren't all allowed up on deck together. There was a good naffy, and the men played bingo from order. And there was entertainment for them. So it wasn't too bad. I was in a cabin with 3 other officers with all our kit. We weren't allowed to take our clothes off. It was most uncomfortable, sleeping day by day and again. Once in a while, I think we were allowed a shower. But I was with 3 other officers, and there was just wasn't enough room.
Did you all have bunks then?
Yes. It has been improved. It was a 2-bunk cabin, but the extra bunks had been put in. But anyhow, we had bunks, and our kit was there. We couldn't get it, our kit, because we couldn't move anything. It was with us.
And did you call in anywhere en route?
No. We went well, going well out. We were a long time in the Atlantic. We went right across the other side of the Atlantic and way down, and then came up to Gibraltar from the south. We thought at one time we might be going to South Africa, which the earlier drafts had done, but no, but obviously it felt safe enough. We were a fairly big convoy and went through the Straits of Gibraltar. Saw some lights in North Africa. We had air raid attacks, and the ship, two from us, which we gathered had French troops on, was sunk. We saw that sunk, but we weren't hit, and we got to a place called Philippeville. That was great because looking over there, these natives selling oranges, this, that, anything wrong. So there was a lot of trains going with bars and getting oranges, and we went to stay there. We went on to a place called Bourne, disembarked there, went into a camp.
Transit camp.
Taken in smaller vessels to Italy, again, to the transit camp.
Whereabouts?
Near Naples, because obviously the fighting had got beyond Naples, but I remember having to leave this troop ship landing, as we call it, and climbing over vessels that had been sunk in the port, and that was a bit scary, it was worse than the other. But anyhow, there you are, we were beginning to know what it was in the theatre of war.
But you still hadn't been divided up?
No.
Still just a large draft?
And of course, the other people who came into our transit camp were the guards. The people who were really paid, it was full of young guards, officers, who hadn't really had much experience, and they did their own thing on the ship. They were next to us. They have a strange thing of wearing their hats when they're eating, and they made the most of it, but they didn't take to these. They were mostly youngsters, didn't take them at all, and the same happened when we got in the transit camp. And there was a commandant at the camp who had us all drilling together. And I said, you can't do this. The guards are the guards, and the light infantry are light infantry. But he won't have us. I got together with the, there's no good these junior officers, they had one, but the senior NCOs of the guards. And I said, look, this is a nonsense. Will you, whatever orders these do, will you do your own thing? And we do our own thing with our own, and they had it with these people, and they said, great, nice to have an understanding. So they did their own drill and marching, and we did but these people in transit camps, they weren't interested much. We were there, they were just going to get us to drill together, we weren't there very long.
Were there any officers with you that you can remember from the DLI, your own?
Yes. I can remember five. There was a company commander called Macmillan, who was Royal Scot. He'd been one of our company commanders.
With the 17th?
Yes. He was a Royal Scot, though, and he's always a kid. And the adjutant, a fellow called Roger Claus Brooks, a great fella, all Italian, but he was originally Oxenbox. So no sooner than we got there than they found they had units, and somebody came and collected them. So I became the senior officer in our draft. I had a good friend called Gordon McKenzie, who had been our senior officer. He subsequently became editor of the newspapers. He was a journalist, great bloke. So I had were both Scottish men. A fellow called Critchley, and I really forgotten, I think, what you were officer, but he was greatly dwindled.